In today's episode,
I was not and am not for the person that, you know, is currently running the country. But I know that that's, you know, that's spilt milk, and I have to roll with my fellow Americans and hope that the best outcome will happen. You know, stop leaving it up to government, whoever we would have elected. Stop thinking that these people are going to save you. They're not going to save you. And if you think that they're going to all of a sudden create jobs for you, they're not going to create jobs for you, because if you're the number one occupation for males in America is operating heavy machinery and trucking. But if everything's going autonomous, I don't care who's telling you that they're going to make America great again. If you're driving a truck, you're out of work, you idiot.
This is Bilal Zaidi, and you're listening to Creator Lab, where I learn how to turn ideas into action. I'll bring you conversations with leading entrepreneurs, nonprofit founders, award-winning designers, educators, artists, and everything else in between. We dig deep into their stories, have honest conversations about how they made their ideas come to life, and the lessons learned along the way. Hey Damon, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've done so many amazing things already in the career that you've had as an entrepreneur. You founded FUBU, of course, which has now already done $6 billion in revenue, the clothing brand. You've been a star on the award-winning show for Shark Tank for, I think it's in its eighth season now, is that right?
Yep, that's it, eight seasons.
Cool. So you're also investing in companies. So for people that are listening in the UK, this is kind of like Dragon's Den in the UK, but it's a massive show here in the US. You're a New York Times bestselling author. You've been a presidential ambassador for global entrepreneurship for Obama's administration. And you traveled with him to Kenya and Cuba and all sorts of cool stuff like that. And now you're launching a new business too called Blueprint & Co. So with all of those things that's going on right now, why have you chosen to launch this new business?
Well, you know, I think that almost all the things I do feed off of each other, and they're always about entrepreneurship. And, you know, whether it was when I was creating a brand for a culture, for us, by us, meaning that I didn't think that product was being made for the people that were wearing it, and I wanted to do that. I think the same thing with Blueprint & Co. Blueprint & Co. is a co-working shared space that executives and seasoned individuals such as myself can go and they can get work done, and or we can park our most innovative teams over there, and we will, you know, basically share best practices and network all in the same place. I didn't see this product out in the market. I think that there is a lot of co-working shared spaces that are made for startups, and I think that they do a really great job at that. But I can't take a Mark Cuban and meet him over there to do business, because, you know, you got young kids, it's beer on tap, it's ping pong, it's a lot of stuff going on there, right? And then we have our social clubs that we go to, whether it's cigar bars, golf clubs, or our social membership clubs. And I can't park two or three of my staff members over there because they'll be drinking and they'll also be irritating other people that are there purely to be social. So I decided to create a space that, you know, if I'm in New York and I want to go to London, instead of having 10 dinners over the course of 2 weeks, I can meet all the people I want to at the same place, and we're all sharing best practices.
So, and to confirm, so this is a co-working space, and you mentioned, like, I think WeWork is probably the biggest player in this space, right? They've already raised $1.7 billion, I think. So you mentioned that you're not targeting startups specifically. It's more executives and that sort of stuff. So how did you kind of come up with the idea in the first place? And how did you decide to differentiate it? Or was it just a need that you found yourself?
It was a need I found myself. You know, when every year when I come back with about 10 of the Shark Tank deals, you know, I don't know everything about business. So I'm going to need to find somebody who's an expert in social media conversion, consumer packaging goods, third-party logistics distribution. And I didn't have one place to find all these people who were already working with various other people. So I decided to create a space where I know various other investors and or even large corporations want to have innovation available to their people. So that's why I said it's a little different from WeWork. And I do think that WeWork does a great job. I think that if you're somebody who is just starting out, you want to activate the power of broke, you go to WeWork. I think if you're a seasoned executive such as myself, you want to activate the power of broke, you go to Blueprint & Co. instead of, you know, instead of building a whole new another office and running all this data and new receptions just for a new project you have, you should probably put, you know, people over at Blueprint & Co. And I say that because I'll give you some examples of the members of Blueprint & Co. already. Yeah. So Ashley Stewart, I don't know how much they're doing, $100 million, whatever the case is, and they're breaking all kind of records in regards to selling apparel to full-figured women. They're parking, you know, four or five of their bodies over there. Lisa Mattress, who is, you know, delivering mattresses straight to your door now, groundbreaking new, you know, way to do business. They're parking two or three bodies over there.
This is in addition to what they've already got their own offices, and they're taking a few space in yours to be collaborative and meet other people. Is that the main benefit for them?
You hit it right on the head. And you'll see, you know, there's even automotive companies that are talking to me saying, listen, you know what? I have a bunch of employees out in the suburbs. I can't get any good talent who wants to sit next to somebody who is making carburetors. I need some good talent, and I want them, and I can only source them in the city because they don't want to go to the suburbs or to Jersey, and they want to be in the heart of everything. So I'm going to park five people over there that do my advertising and marketing because I want them to see all these, the way the new people are converting people through social media. So there's a lot of even Fortune 1000 companies that are talking to me about placing people there.
Very cool, man. So you mentioned this was a need that you saw yourself, right? Is that how you normally look at ideas? Because you're presented with thousands of ideas as an investor and you know, as an entrepreneur, you've opened many different businesses. So is that how you normally think of ideas? Is that you're always looking for needs that you have yourself?
Yeah, I think that people should always realize that when somebody invests in you, there is something that relates to them. So, you know, yes, there's always capital return, but they either relate to the person running the company, they relate to the need in the market. They go, you know what? I always used to say there's got to be a better way, right?
Yeah.
And somebody created a better way. So, yeah, they definitely always resonate with it.
And in terms of, like, you're doing, you know, how many businesses have you got right now? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know. I would think probably about 80.
All right.
Right now, yeah, probably about 80.
That includes investments too?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that includes investments. But you have to think about it like this, that some of them run on their own, and, you know, I talk to them every quarter, or some I talk to every year. Some of them have kind of fell by the wayside and they're laying dormant. So, you know, if you really look at active companies, I probably have about 30.
Yeah. So even 30, that's, I mean, most people can't handle one. So the reason I bring that up is because I think one lesson that we can all take away from your background and the way you think about things is how you've managed to focus in on the best opportunities for yourself. So if you look at those 80 and the other 1,000 that you had brought to you, what is it that you're looking at in terms of focusing in on certain things? Is there certain criteria that you're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's always going to be the person that is running the company that brings it to me. And, you know, what is their experience? Have they had enough failures to understand where they need to go forward? Do we have the same philosophies together? And, you know, what's their plan for scalability? You know, just because, you know, you have a great product doesn't mean it's going to be a great company. And just because you have a great company doesn't mean it's investable.
Yeah.
So, you know, we look at that first. Second of all, I look at, you know, do I see that there's a need in the market? Do I feel that I either have somebody I can license it to or somebody on my staff that can run it? And does it fit into our portfolio? And that could mean that it doesn't compete with anything. And, you know, listen, if it's a product that we're talking to drugstores every day,
yeah,
if we're talking to CVS and Walgreens every day, and this does not compete with anything we're talking to them about, then it may fit into the portfolio. Mm. If it cannibalizes something else we already have, then we most likely shouldn't do that investment. You know, and those are a couple of things that we really look for about, you know, in any of the products. So, you know, either do I have a good staff around me to handle it? Does it fit in the portfolio? And does the person who's operating it, can I trust that they're going to run this company and scale it?
All right. I'm just looking at your current business that you're launching, right? So you could have done the same thing here, right? You could have invested in a team and said, all right, you guys go and run this. I'm already busy with these 80 businesses or whatever it is. So what made you say, I actually want to be involved with this one myself and I want to start this one myself from zero to one rather than just invest in it?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, but I saw a need for it myself personally. And yeah, you know what, if you want to be hands off on something and you want to just invest in something, then there's a lot of products out there. It's called the stock market, right? You can just go put your money in something and that's it. But to activate the power broke is exactly that point, that you can't just go out there. Well, I don't think you should go out there and spend a bunch of money, and then everybody's going to tell you what you want to hear, you know, and then all of a sudden you're going to turn around and you're out of your money because, you know, the people were doing the wrong thing. So I lost the most money I've ever lost was when I spent $6 million on a company called Heatherette, which, you know, I thought should have worked out the right way, but I hired everybody and I didn't roll up my sleeves and get my ass into the office and run it.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is why any of my projects that start from ground zero, I am hands-on and very hands-on.
Mm. This is a kind of a tangent, but what do you have the most fun doing? Just because hearing you talk about starting it from the ground, I'm just curious to hear, you know, investing probably has its own buzz, starting something has its own buzz, doing corporate stuff probably has its own buzz. But if you were to pick one of those things, is there one that really stands out to you?
I think I have the most fun doing the actual day-to-day and adding the fundamentals of what I already know to a current business. And then I have the most fun challenging myself, getting a little nervous about it, and learning the things I need to know in the business, because it's exciting to go to work every day and learn something new.
Yeah.
It's exciting to challenge, you know, to challenge myself about it too. So I think that that's the kind of person I am. You know, and I'll give you a prime example. I saw an interview of Richard Branson was talking one day, I was watching him, and he was saying how, you know, Virgin, he has 300 companies, and when he sold Virgin Records and moved over to Virgin Airlines and then, you know, moved over to this, moved over to that, he finds that same excitement. And I realize I'm the same person, because honestly, something like FUBU, we love FUBU. FUBU was my baby, but I can't look at the same FB, you know, forever, right? It's very, very hard. I'm too close to it.
Mm.
So I find I really get excited about new businesses. It's like a crackerjack box to me, you know?
Yeah, okay. No, I can tell. I mean, we'll come back to that in a minute, because in a moment I will want to switch gears and learn a bit more about the way you think about things on more of a macro level. But you mentioned a couple of things before. You said The Power of Broke several times. So if you're listening to this and you haven't read The Power of Broke, which was your last book, New York Times bestseller, right?
Yes.
And my mom hasn't read it, and she's listening to this. She's my number one fan. So so if you were explaining The Power of Broke, could you just give a quick synopsis of what that is?
Yeah, so The Power of Broke is the fact that we all, you know, we're taught, you know, at an early age, you need money to make money. You gotta know somebody famous or have a famous last name or have connections, and that is not the truth. And I've seen two type of people come on Shark Tank. One was the person who thinks that the sharks are going to sprinkle pixie dust on them. We all just have a magic wand and, you know, we're going to take away all their problems as soon as we're their partners. And that's not the truth. You know, you look at me and I always say it, if that was the truth, then FUBU would be called Nike or Ralph Lauren. So obviously I don't have the answer to everything. You also see another type of entrepreneur that comes on the show, and they say, they kind of tell you their story, and the sharks are just one aspect of where they're going to go on their journey. And if the shark helps them or not, they don't care. They're moving forward regardless, and they're going to use whatever assets they have. And it's almost never money. It's always OPM, which I like to say is other people's manufacturing or mind power or manpower or marketing or mentors or anything else of that sense.
Intangible.
It's what's in front of you, you know, and you know, when you, one of the top reasons why small businesses fail is actually overfunding. They go out and raise too much money, whether they take a loan of their house or they leverage their credit cards, and they go and build a $20,000 website when they only needed a $1,000 Facebook page. They go and build a, you know, they open up a brick and mortar store with a 2-year lease on it when they needed a kiosk, or they, you know, they go and open an office instead of going into a WeWork and just having a desk for a second.
Mm.
And that's what happens. So you know, money is a superficial high. You cannot buy your customers. So, you know, customer acquisition only comes after you created some form of a movement or a great product. And that's the theory of the power broke, that people need to understand that if you have, you know, 10 pieces of whatever you have in this crap, well, then if you go and take $1 million, you're going to have $1 million worth of crap.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to sell one thing at a time, like I did with one hat, or Mark Zuckerberg found one friend.
Yeah.
And now he has 1.2 billion friends.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's a good way to put it. So I actually heard you talk about this in relation to, you know, you've set up and launched many clothing businesses. And I think the one example you gave was normally it would cost about $75,000 to create an initial line to, you know, go and show Macy's or whoever it is to say, look at my new clothing line. But you've done it for around $1,500 by going to a tailor and using Instagram influencers and that sort of stuff. So I think that's a really a great concept, and it looks like it can be applied to most things. However, looking at your new business, that seems like quite a capital intensive business, right? Like, it's not like you can just go and spend $1,000 on a massive building and ask people. So how have you applied the power of Broke to the new co-working space?
Yeah, so you know what? I haven't taken out any ads on the co-working space because there's no need to pay for it if I can't fully explain to somebody. I could have taken the entire building. I could have outfitted this thing with, you know, I could have built it out with $10 million worth of stuff, and I didn't. I was more about what can I bring to it. So as I started to show it to my friends and colleagues to get their advice, they started to say, hey, I want to be in here. Damon, you're going to connect me with this person. You're going to connect me with that person. And I use exactly that. I use my connections to source people together, and they realized that this was kind of a hub for high-end networking and for individuals to meet each other. I didn't go out and get the fancy chandelier and the big, you know, this and that. I just really created a place where they felt it was a meeting room. And it cost me what I think would be was 20% of what somebody else would normally, get. And then I also went out and I had to seek strategic partners like who believed in the process. So I went to Veridesk, who have the desk that, you know, they can lift up and go all the way down, so that workers probably stay at work longer because they feel more active because they're standing if they want to. And I said, can we create a strategic partnership? And bang, they created a strategic partnership with me. And I did this with 10 other people. I could have went out and bought everything, but I didn't. It was all about reaching out personally and calling people. And my members, I called every one of them. I took my Rolodex. It took me literally 3 weeks to write down all the people I know that I felt were valuable enough to either give me insight or show up and hang out. And I called them all personally. I didn't have a secretary call them. I didn't take out an ad. I didn't send out a mass email. I picked up the phone.
It looks like you've been able to do things at like a very small percentage of cost compared to other people. But what about being able to iterate that product? Because, you know, normally with a clothing line or a tech product, software, app, website, etc., you normally launch it and you know, the customer development process, and you find what people call product market fit. So have you been testing that out before you've opened the doors fully? And what have you gotten a few examples of things that you've changed with the product over time?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've moved my entire staff up into the space for a while for them to say, I like this, I don't like this. I've also realized that even though it's an open format and there are some areas where we need to create private offices for sensitive type of materials or businesses, people who, you know, feel like, you know, they don't want people looking into their businesses or whatever the case is, or legal or accounting. I've also noticed that when bigger companies who try to come and want to take 10 and 20 desks, what I do is I'm going to now take the entire building. I'm going to get them a different space in the building, but they'll have access to this. So all access to the three floors that I have, where we have all the curriculums and all the other things. So I've learned what needs to be done, and it's going to be a process too. I'm going to learn every single day about how to improve it even better. And then after that, we will, look at scaling this product all across the country and then all across the world.
I'm going to have to come and check it out.
Oh, absolutely.
Where is it in New York, by the way?
We're at 39th Street and 8th and 7th Avenue.
Cool, man. Well, switching gears, I did want to kind of take a step back. Normally on the show, I would ask some questions around your kind of mindset and some bigger questions, because I understand obviously business is a big part of your life, but it's not everything, right? So what matters most to you, man? I mean, you've made a decent amount of money by now. You've had some success. What stops you from stopping and just going and chilling out on a beach or wherever it might be and just taking it easy?
You know, that's a good question. I think that it's the fact that I've been fortunate enough and been blessed and rewarded, and I'm able to help change other people's lives. I think it's very rewarding. So whether it's my staff or whether it's, you know, the people I see in the street that say that whatever I've been doing has helped them empower themselves or reward their families or the stuff. So I think that that is one thing that's really exciting to me. And that's why, you know, when I was pinned as an ambassador going around the world, seeing what was happening, you know, I honestly felt like I wasn't doing enough. I felt like I wasn't, you know, when you see people who have whose family have been murdered in tribal wars, but yet all they care about is helping other people, you know, or you see people are stopping human trafficking and things of that nature, I just tap myself on the shoulder and say, you've been so rewarded. You know, what more can you do? I also, you know, I'm just a workaholic. You know, I work so hard to get to this place in my life. I don't know if I could just relax on a beach. I tried to retire once for 3 months and it just didn't work. I was about 36 when I tried to retire and I wanted to kill myself. So I'm going to be doing something regardless. You know, and then again, and last but not least, but, you know, we're in a very challenging time politically and with technology changing everything. And I want to also stay on the cutting edge of change because things are changing so drastically around the world now from a technology standpoint and everything else. I have to constantly educate myself because, you know, hopefully I'm going to be around another 40, 50 years. And, you know, I want to stay on the cutting edge.
I mean, you mentioned the current, you know, political climate and what's going on. We're both in the US and what's going on in Europe. There's all sorts of change coming along. And I know you were, you know, part of the Obama administration's, you were a page ambassador. So not to make this a political discussion at all, but, you know, like you mentioned before, you've seen all this suffering around the world and you want to make positive change. In times like this with uncertainty and all the negativity that we're all experiencing right now, whatever side of the spectrum you're on, as a leader and as an entrepreneur, what do you see your role in that whole palaver going on right now?
Yeah, you know, my role has always been and always will be to just try to, I call myself the people shark, or people have called me the people shark, because my job is to try to educate people. And I was not and am not for the person that, you know, is currently running the country. But I know that that's, you know, that's spilt milk and I have to roll with my fellow Americans and hope that the best outcome will happen. But in the interim of that, you know, you have, you know, again, you know, the old saying, you know, some people make things happen. Some people watch things happen. Some people wonder what happened. I am trying to educate myself and I'm trying to educate the people out there who may not know any better what's happening and try to cut through all the clutter. I'm trying to be the best person I can be. And I'm trying to tell them, you know, stop leaving up to government, whoever we would have elected. Stop thinking that these people are going to save you. They're not going to save you. And if you think that they're going to all of a sudden create jobs for you, they're not going to create jobs for you. Because if you're the number one occupation for males in America is operating heavy machinery and trucking. But if everything's going autonomous, I don't care who's telling you that they're going to make America great again. If you're driving a truck, you're out of work, you idiot. Yeah. So what you need to do is start understanding coding and programming and being a technician, because maybe you want to start being a technician and operating those trucks in a different way. Stop thinking the government's going to hand everything down to you. So if you're not going to get an education, you're an idiot. So I'm trying to share that with them and have them forget about race and prejudice and this kind of working class and that kind of working class. Go educate yourself on how to make change. And I'm trying to educate people with that. And sometimes you have to say it in such a raw way that they go, you know what? You're right. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to bring it to their attention. I'm trying to bring it even to the kids. Maybe schools, the way they're done now, they're antiquated. Maybe you don't need 3-4 years of college and then you finish with a $300,000 debt. And all you wanted to do at the end of the day was being somebody in marketing.
Yeah.
Maybe you should go and take a digital class on that. Yes, if you are going to be a heart surgeon, please go to school.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe there's some other ways to work smarter. So, you know, I try to just educate people and just have them use what we call common sense on where this world is going. And it has nothing to do with politics. I just want to try to empower people and let them know what I'm seeing out there.
Yeah. No, definitely, man. I'm with you on that one. And I've heard you a lot of your interviews in the past. You mentioned you lost $10 million in 2 years in the stock market. And you were scared of going back into that for some time. You know, how much does fear play into, you know, your motivation and what you're doing on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so fear is a healthy paranoia is great. And when you heard me say stuff like that, the reality is that I didn't do enough homework. So just throwing my money in the stock market or just opening up a Blueprint & Co. or just throwing money at a company called Heatherette and not knowing, it all came back to something, not doing my homework and not studying what I was doing. So the biggest mistakes I made in my life were the mistakes where I didn't do the research, or I didn't surround myself with like-minded people that could educate me on the research, or I didn't have financial intelligence.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I'm saying about the American or anybody out there who's not doing their homework on where this world is going.
Mm.
And I'm guilty of the same thing, and I've learned from it. And now that's why when you ask me, why would I be down there Blueprint & Co. myself? I'm doing my homework.
Mm.
Why would I put my full staff over there? So it's all about doing research. And today it is so easy with analytics, with the internet, with everything out there to do your research, take affordable steps and learn from them, and then see if it's the right thing for you. So my fear all came from when it was the unknown. And now I try to do the best I can to educate myself to make that unknown a little less unknown.
So knowledge gets rid of a lot of the fear for you.
Knowledge gets rid of a lot of fear, because a lot of times the knowledge, you sit there and you learn, and you go, wait a minute, this is not for me.
Yeah, or it's not as bad as I thought.
Yeah, exactly. You don't jump in the ring with Mike Tyson as your first one. You need to spar and get punched in the nose, you know, by somebody else first, right? So that's the way I look at it. So
yeah.
Now I make sure I spar with a real with somebody to see if I really like getting punched in the nose in whatever business that is.
I think that's a great way to finish off, man.
Yeah, all right.
Well, listen, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Looking forward to checking out the new space, and hopefully we'll have another one of these in the future to hear about your next endeavor.
Well, perfect. Thank you for taking the time. And out of this space, we're doing live podcasts, so hopefully you will come in there and do one of your podcasts live from the space.
Definitely, man. All right, man. Well, have a great week.
Man.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed that. If you did, please share this with your friends. I'll be bringing you some incredible guests over the coming weeks. You can subscribe on iTunes, on Stitcher, or any podcast app you're using. You can also subscribe to the email list on the website. Just go to creatorlab.fm/subscribe. You'll be able to get every single episode, free giveaways, and exclusive content straight to your inbox. You can also listen to all the episodes on creatorlab.fm with all the show notes, books, links, any resources that were mentioned in the conversations. And please say hello. You can send me an email directly. That is hello@creatorlab.fm, or just find me on any social network. The username is creatorlabfm. I look forward to hearing from you. Enjoy.